Plain dead. Can you imagine this? People who actually fake their deaths for whatever reason. Elizabeth Greenwood joins me in a moment. We'll get right into this story on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Elizabeth Greenwood is the author of Plain Dead. Now, that's about people who have faked their own deaths and the world of pseudo-suicide, basically, or they call it pseudocide. The New York Times calls it grim fun, and the book list says it's entertaining and enlightening. Why do people do this? She teaches, by the way, creative nonfiction at Columbia University. Elizabeth Greenwood on Coast to Coast. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Hi, George. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. We're keeping you up late. You're on the East Coast, aren't you?
Sure am. Middle of the night over here, but I've had plenty of coffee, and I'm really excited to talk pseudocide.
What an amazing book and subject. Oh, my God. How did you get involved in even writing about this?
Well, there's the short story and the long story, and I'll give you the thumbnail on each. So
okay.
The short story is that I, in 2012, wrote a profile of a man named Frank Ahern, who at the time worked here in New York. And Frank is a quote-unquote privacy consultant. So he is a person who helps people disappear, both physically and digitally. A lot of people bring up that character on Breaking Bad, Walter White in the last season. He's kind of the real-life version of that, although he claims not to do anything illegal. You can really actually vaporize without resorting to illegal means. So, you know, one of the questions that I kept asking Frank is, you know, well, why would you disappear instead of fake your death if your problems were really that grave, pardon the pun, you know, because faking your death really means staging some kind of accident or hoax to make it appear that you have perished, that that's the end, that's the period, punctuation point on your story. Whereas disappearing means, you know, it's kind of your classic case of dad goes out for cigarettes one day and never comes back. So it's just more open-ended. So my question to Frank was always like, well, why wouldn't you fake your death? And what he kept telling me over and over again was that it's actually a lot easier to get yourself caught if you fake your death instead of disappearing. There's more for investigators to look into the circumstances surrounding your death, especially if you were in some hot water. You know, usually it's legally, financially, or maritally around the time of your fake death. The way I got to Frank in the first place is because I, like many Americans, have a ton of student loan debt from both my undergraduate and graduate degrees. And I was having dinner with a friend one night when I was in graduate school, and I'd taken out all these loans so foolishly, all my own fault. And I was saying, oh my gosh, Matt, what am I going to do after graduation when I have to start paying these back? I think I need to just find a country with a really nice beach and no extradition policy and just slip through the cracks. A fantasy probably a lot of us have had at one point or another. And my friend said very offhandedly, meaning nothing of it, he said, oh, or you could fake your own death. And I was like, that's such a great idea. Why didn't I think of that? So I just became very fascinated with the whole concept of how you would do it pragmatically. Of, you know, I'd always heard about death hoaxes like Elvis and Tupac. And I just became totally enraptured with the idea, especially once I met characters like Frank and real people out in the world who deal in disappearance and pseudocide.
Were you serious about disappearing?
I don't think I was. I mean, I think that it was really more of the fantasy that was very appealing. You know, I always joke that if I'd actually faked my death, my mom would kill me. So I'd be dead right now. I don't think I could ever go through
and you'd,
with it.
You'd end up missing the ones you cared about, I think, eventually.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the real reason why so many people end up getting caught, you know, isn't because they get their image captured on closed circuit TV somewhere. And it isn't really a function of the kind of omnipresent surveillance and technology of the world we live in today. It's really because people can't cut ties with their past lives. It's just because they can't stop talking to mom, you know, on her birthday or when they miss her. So it's really kind of a human nature problem why people have a real hard time staying dead when they're supposed to be.
How often, Elizabeth, does this happen where people actually try to disappear?
Yeah, it's such a good question. It's a really tough one to answer. So Excuse me. In the case of fake deaths for life insurance purposes, which is a main factor of people who fake their deaths, usually they're trying to cash out on that life insurance policy and, you know, get rich and die trying, as it were. So I spoke with the Coalition of Insurance Fraud Investigators, and these are people who monitor all insurance fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So not just life insurance, but Medicaid fraud,
everything.
You know,
yeah.
Any kind of fraud you could commit. And they said that just life insurance fraud is less than 1% of what they see on an annual basis. And speaking to fraud investigators, you know, the guys who are kind of like the real life Indiana Joneses, when there's a fishy case that comes in from some far-flung country, they get on the plane and, you know, traipse out to the village in Mongolia, and they'll dig up empty coffins sometimes. They have pretty amazing jobs. They're investigating usually several dozen of these a year, but these are only really high sticker price frauds, you know, in the realm of the millions that they're investigating, because it's a kind of a cost-benefit analysis for the company. They're not going to be paying these guys thousands of dollars a day.
That's right.
Unless the policy is very high. So the kind of inherent paradox with trying to get a good number on death fraud is that people who do it successfully are simply presumed dead. We don't know. We only hear about the cases that go awry. So with those, just at least American cases, it's around a couple hundred a year.
And do they disappear? Are there fake bodies with the teeth pulled out? What happens?
I mean, you name it. It's pretty amazing. So one of the ways in which people often attempt to commit life insurance fraud, particularly, again, this all kind of goes to your motives of why you're trying to.
Sure. And the benefactor in these cases, Elizabeth, would be whom? The guy's wife or some girlfriend or what?
Indeed. Yes, exactly. So it's typically, you know, a wife, a child, usually someone you're blood related to.
Are they in on the scam?
Yes, they have to be. Unfortunately, you can't collect your own life insurance policy. So that's one of the kind of tricky parts, is you need a trusted co-conspirator. And as a lot of the fraud investigators told me, you know, they will always, first thing, like, go to the person who claimed the money and start interviewing them. And a lot of people break pretty quickly. So you've got to really know who you're getting.
He's hiding under the treehouse. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. But to answer your first question, so for life insurance fraud purposes, people will get very theatrical. And typically, these kinds of cases occur overseas, in countries where there's a very robust culture of fraud. So one place that I visited for the book, and that the investigators told me again and again where they see cases coming from right now, is the Philippines. So your average fraudster will go to the Philippines, and you can get so theatrical with your fake death over there. You can purchase a body and a morgue. Like, it can be anything from a black market morgue. Well, they will pick up, you know, dead derelicts off the street and keep them on ice for these purposes. Or you can go into a municipal morgue where they're just, like, very overtaxed and say, oh, it's Uncle Marco. We finally found him. Yeah, it's pretty grim stuff. And they take that body and immediately cremate it. And then they will host fake funerals where they will hire, you know, locals, pay them a few bucks to weep over the casket.
Wow. And what about the death certificate? Will you get a phony death certificate? Oh, my God.
That's a big part. So most of the best frauds really don't take place with, you know, these very theatrical kind of scenarios. Because then what they'll do is videotape the funeral and provide all this photo evidence to the life insurance company. But it's really about the documents. There are a lot of documents that go into a death. When you think about it, you have the death certificate. If it was a grisly accident, there's an autopsy report. There's a doctor's, you know, testimony, witness testimony, police reports. So making sure that, you know, and I don't recommend this by any means, but really looking at those documents and getting high quality documents is really how most death frauds are carried out.
Give us an example of a story of an individual who tried this and let's say succeeded, and then maybe one where they got caught.
Well, the problem is, for my book, I talked to people some people who did fake their deaths, but they all got caught.
They all got caught.
I was talking to them. I unfortunately have not found that holy grail person yet, someone who's presumed dead and wants to talk to me. But hey, Coast to Coast listeners, if you're out there,
that's right. When we go to calls next hour, they might pop up for you.
That would be great. So one of my favorite stories comes out of the UK, and it's about a man named John Darwin, who, in his own words, he called himself Mr. Boring. He was married to his wife, Anne, at the time, and he had been a school teacher. At the time, he was a corrections officer, and he and Anne had gotten themselves into some pretty steep real estate debt. They had taken out mortgages on a lot of different properties, and were having trouble paying the notes. They had tenants that weren't paying the rent on time. So they, in John's own words, he realized at a certain point that he was really in over his head and he was worth more dead than alive. So his plan was to cash in on these life insurance policies and pensions that he had. So with the help of his wife, he staged his drowning in a kayaking accident on the North Sea right in front of his home in Seton Carew, England, paddled out. He kind of crash-landed a little bit down the beach. His wife, Anne, picked him up in the car, drove him to the train station, where he then took a train to the west coast of England, camped out on the beach for several months. He grew very gaunt and thin and grew this long beard and took on this elaborate disguise. He then actually returned to his own home. They had this amazing Victorian house where they rented out half of it to renters, and they lived in the other half. So he took on the name Carl Fenwick, and as Carl Fenwick, he posed as a renter
His
own room next door. And the houses were connected through a series of stairs. So at night, he would just take these stairs and, you know, go to bed with his wife, and in the morning, go back as Carl Fenwick. So they had two adult sons that thought he was dead the whole time. They were not in on this plan. So in the time that John was presumed dead, he managed to obtain an authentic UK passport and the name of a person called John Jones, who was born around the same time as him but died in childhood. And with his passport and with Anne, with his wife, they traveled all over the world to a dozen different countries. They bought property in Panama. And after about 6 years of this, John turned himself in. He was never caught. What he told me was that his whole plan was to kind of release the liquidity in the homes and the life insurance and pensions to, you know, pay back his debts and then come back and make good. Well, as you can imagine, that's not exactly what happened. He turned himself into a London police station in December 2008, saying that he had amnesia and that he couldn't account for events prior to the year 2000. That ruse quickly unraveled, like within about 24 hours. So he served 3 years and 3 months in prison. Anne actually ended up serving more time than him because she pleaded not guilty. They divorced while they were serving their sentences. But, you know, the amazing thing about John is, you know, I spent about a week with him, in Seton Carew after he was released from prison. And, you know, he showed me exactly where he launched the kayak and the homes and how everything happened. But he's recently remarried, and he actually lives in the Philippines now. So kind of full circle.
Amazing stories at how they would do this. And I guess you have to have a lot of guts, Elizabeth, to want to do this.
Yeah, a lot of guts, or also like a lot of self-confidence in a way, kind of like suffering from high self-esteem in the sense that you think that you'll be able to get away with it, that you're going to fool law enforcement,
right,
law investigators, that you can really pull the wool over dozens and dozens of highly trained people's eyes. I also think that it really comes down to desperation to go through with it. And that's something that I realized in the course of researching my book, is that like student loan debt isn't really that big of a motivation compared to people who find themselves millions and millions of dollars in debt or facing down, you know, pretty severe criminal charges. And you kind of start taking on some fight or flight response. And it was, that's really one that's flight.
Is it fraud to fake your death if you don't have any financial gain?
It's a great question. So faking your death in and of itself is not illegal. So there's no law on the books called faking your own death. However, so many of the ancillary crimes associated with a death fraud are very much illegal. So, of course, if you are committing life insurance fraud, mm-hmm. if you're taking out someone, using someone else's social security number, identity, that's identity fraud.
Right.
You know, there have been cases where even people who stage, for example, a drowning, where they, it seems as if they plunge to their death from jumping into a reservoir, say, and the state allocates resources like search and rescue operations and Coast Guard to go look for you. There have been cases where the people, the fraudsters, have then had to pay back the state for their own rescue to the tune of millions of dollars. So, you know, there's this very, very narrow slice you can occupy where you're kind of just living off a suitcase of cash and not taking out another identity, and just flying very much under the radar, but very, very difficult.
Why have there always been rumors that Elvis Presley faked his death?
Yeah, so the Elvis death hoax is probably the one that many people are most familiar with. I think that with all of the kind of celebrity death hoaxes, I think it just doesn't seem fair that these amazing artists, these larger-than-life people, are kind of taken before their time. So the Elvis death hoax, around the time, there was a lot of theories that, you know, he was colluding with the mob and that with the government, and that, you know, people cited evidence from his own funeral that it looked like the it was a mannequin in the coffin, and that it, you know, it was sweating in this unnatural way. And then looking at documents on the death certificate where Elvis' name was Elvis Aaron Presley, and he spelled Aaron, A-R-O-N, you know, which usually has two A's.
Mm-hmm.
And on the death certificate, it had two A's, so suggesting that, you know, that wasn't actually him. And there's been a ton written about the Elvis death hoax conspiracy. The one I focus on in my book, just because it's a bit newer and fresher, is people who call themselves the Believers, who maintain that Michael Jackson faked his death.
And they just don't let go of these things, do they?
Well, yeah, it's really a testament of faith, you know, especially all these years later. You know, but what I found is that I think, like many conspiracy theories out there, once you kind of dig deep, it becomes bigger in some ways than the initial kind of object of your inquiry, because you start drawing on all these other texts and ideas and, you know, piecing together the puzzle. So I think that's one way that it kind of maintains an excitement for people.
We're with Elizabeth Greenwood. Her book is called Plain Dead. Her website is lizgreenwood.com, which is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to come back in just a moment and continue chatting with her about why people do this. This is an incredible story. The subtitle, A Journey Through the World of Death Fraud, people just faking their deaths either for financial gain or to simply disappear off the face of the planet. In the last hour, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll take your questions. But if you have tried to fake your death, check in with us. Or if you already have and you want to admit it on the air, call us too. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Elizabeth Greenwood with us. Plain Dead is the book. Elizabeth, do some people merely just not try to fake their deaths, but just try to get a new identity and start life all over again?
Yeah, people definitely do that. Again, it really comes down to what your motivations are. So if you just kind of want to get out of Dodge and start again, and there aren't really people looking for you, then that could be a way to go. That's really what it comes down to, is who's going to be searching for you. And that really kind of colors and informs that your plan going forward. So, for example, one of the questions I get asked a lot is if WITSEC, the Witness Protection Program, you know, where they will relocate and create new lives and identities for informants or people who testify against usually the mafia or people like that. People ask me often, oh, well, do they fake their deaths? Does the government ever fake their deaths? And as far as I could find, you know, speaking to, you know, different people who are associated with that program, they do not, for the simple reason that, you know, if you're a rat and suddenly it appears like, you know, you jumped off a bridge or something, no one's going to believe it anyway. People already know that you're kind of giving yourself up. So in that case, they don't bother with that extra step. They just kind of set people up new. So that would be one example where you wouldn't bother with the fake death if no one's going to really believe it anyway.
Okay, so let's do this, Elizabeth, and kids don't do this at home, but if somebody wants to fake their death, kind of take us through those steps. What do they do?
There's so many steps and so many things to consider. And I had great fun going through all of these potential questions with Steve Rombaum, who some of your listeners might know from his show on Investigation Discovery, Nowhere to Hide. It's an amazing show. Steve does these incredible cases all over the world, usually with very high-profile missing persons. That's really his expertise. So he also subcontracts for these life insurance companies where someone has faked their death. So I got him to sit me down and just walk me through everything you really have to think about if you are going to commit one of these frauds. So, again, the first question is, why are you trying to disappear? Who's looking for you? And, you know, will your fake death seem at all believable? So, you know, one reason that a lot of people do fake their deaths is because they're facing down a pretty big prison sentence. And usually, you know, when that happens, people, again, like if they didn't put the time in to really establishing, for example, a new identity, a believable identity. And what Steve told me is that if you want to use a line of credit, say, in an alternate identity, you need to start doing that decades in advance because it just looks fishy otherwise. Oh, this person was just born, you know, on December 6, 2016.
As a 40-year-old or whatever they are.
That's exactly right. So there's just so much thinking that goes into these things. So first of all, it's who's looking for you. So one of my favorite cases is about a man named Marcus Schrenker, who was in the news when this happened. So he was a money manager in Indianapolis, and he bilked his clients out of millions of dollars, having them invest in a foreign currency that does not exist.
He never even bought them, did he?
I'm sorry?
He didn't even buy the currencies, did he? They
weren't around. Exactly. So this, you know, raised the eyebrows of the state's Securities and Exchange Commission. It was very clear that, you know, he had committed this crime. So what he did was he piloted a prop plane. He had his pilot's license, and he flew it over kind of the border of Alabama, Louisiana, and he signaled Mayday that he was going down and that there was a plane crash. He actually ended up parachuting out of his plane, and he got caught in the branches of the swamp and stashed a motorcycle with, you know, cash not far from where he landed. But, you know, the thing he didn't think about is that he also bought a road atlas that investigators found was two pages ripped out from it. And they simply went to a gas station and bought the same road atlas and looked at those pages that were ripped out and kind of led investigators right to where he was. So, you know, the big challenge is really in staging also a very believable accident. So I think that a lot of us lay people, when we're kind of fantasizing, you know, oh, if I were ever to go through with it, what would I do? A lot of us have this idea that the perfect fake death scenario is one by water, a drowning.
Where there's no body, right?
Because there's no body, right. We, unfortunately, you know, we have to be, think of a an accident where we can carry this body we have into our next life. So, you know, that you're just fish food at the bottom of the ocean, no one thinks twice about it. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. If there is a water accident where a body doesn't wash up, usually within a few days, it looks very fishy to investigators because most bodies do turn up eventually. So, especially if you found yourself in any kind of recent chaos that it looks like you're trying to avoid, and then you stage a water accident, it just doesn't really look believable. It will get a higher level of scrutiny. So thinking of an accident that you could really pull off. So, you know, over the course of Steve and my conversations, what we kind of landed on was one way, and again, not suggesting this, not recommending this, but, you know, one way that a lot of people do go missing very sadly every year is going on a hike. You go for a hike in the mountains and you don't come back. And again, that's a scenario that's just much more open-ended. It's unclear what happened to you rather than, oh, you chartered a fishing boat, you fell off the edge, okay, you drowned. You go for a hike and don't come back, well, you know, you could have tumbled down a snowy ravine. You could have gotten eaten by a mountain lion. You could have gotten snatched off the trail by a madman. No one really knows. So that's a kind of more viable scenario. But again, that's one that, you know, if many people who are trying to do this are trying to life insurance fraud, and you cannot collect life insurance fraud without a body for 7 years. So if you're impatient, that wouldn't be the way to go for you. So it really is about questioning your motive.
What an amazing story, Elizabeth. I mean, absolutely riveting. How so many...
I had a lot of fun writing this book.
I'm going to be curious when we just open up the phone lines to see if anybody's ever even contemplated doing this.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Have you had people come to you and say, I planned it, I was going to do it, I backed out. I decided not to do it.
I haven't really had that particular query yet, so I would be so interested in hearing about that. But what I have heard, I have gotten a lot of, not a lot, but a few emails saying, you know, my dad or my friend's dad disappeared all these years ago under these mysterious circumstances. Do you have any idea how I could start looking into the circumstances around his death or disappearance? What would you do? How would you authenticate this? You know, and unfortunately, I personally am not a private investigator, so these questions are a little tough, but it's been kind of shocking to me just how many people are connected to someone who has gone missing under mysterious circumstances.
Do you have any data, Elizabeth, on how many people actually disappear every year in the United States? I don't have anything specific. I have heard it could be upwards of 100,000 people who just vanish.
Who just vanish. Yeah, absolutely. It's a pretty big number. And again, it's like figuring out the good numbers on this are pretty tough for obvious reasons. But I have heard figures around that same ballpark, you know, anywhere from a couple dozen thousand to upwards of 100,000. It's just kind of mind-boggling.
Just one of a kind. And are there other countries where this is happening too, not just here?
It happens all over the world. This is really a worldwide phenomenon. Again, there are certain countries where life insurance fraud will come up more and more because of, you know, just kind of culturally, it's easier to obtain certain documents or kind of middlemen to help you out. but it happens all over the world. I've noticed that a lot of these cases come out of the UK, from England, Scotland, Ireland. I don't know why that is, but I do notice a lot of death fraud coming out from there. When you see it happening stateside, it's usually because of a person like Marcus Schrenker that makes headlines, kind of a businessman who, you know, made some mistakes and then tries to evade consequences. That's kind of the more typical American death fraudster.
Can the perfect death be planned?
Oh, gosh. It's a really tough question. I don't think it can be, because there's always one thing that you don't consider. You know, Steve Rombaum, the private investigator, always says, he says that in his line of work, in investigating fishy deaths, he can make a million mistakes. He can go down rabbit holes. He can go down dead ends looking for you. But you cannot make a single mistake. And it's just pretty impossible. One of my favorite stories that I encountered in researching my book is of a man named Benny Wint. And he successfully pulled off a death fraud for nearly 20 years. He staged a drowning in Daytona Beach in the 80s. He stuffed several thousand dollars into his swim trunks and swam out and, you know, swam like a mile or so down the beach, you know, swam out, dried off on shore, bought a t-shirt at the local gas station and hitched a ride and just started new. He's one of the kind of odd cases that didn't look suspicious for whatever reason. So he did manage to pull off the drowning scenario, kind of the exception to the rule that I've heard. So anyway, he managed to stay presumed dead for nearly two decades. He assumed the name Bill Sweet, and he fathered several children. He had a common law wife, and he got away with it until one day he was pulled over by a cop because the light bulb above his license plate had burnt out. They pulled him over, and they said, "Sir, can you provide ID?" He said, "No, I can't. I'm sorry." He was booked in jail as John Doe until a couple hours later, he just came clean with it. He said, "You know, I'm presumed dead. I've been living under these auspices for 20 years." So, you know, I think that you can plan with as much precision and get the great documents and all of that. But, you know, we're frail as humans. We're very prone to mistakes. You can't anticipate every single burnt out light bulb that you'll encounter in a lifetime. So it's been tough.
Pre-social networking, was it easier then to fake your own death?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And it's one that totally propelled me through this journey, because it just seems so much more impossible to fake your death in the 21st century because, you know, in a lot of ways, we've really relinquished all our privacy. We have these smartphones that are pinging up our coordinates into the sky, and we've made it so much easier for people to track us just in our digital footprint through social media profiles. You know, this is a question that I really posed to Frank Ahern, the man I mentioned earlier, who yeah. helps people disappear.
Is that a legal job, what he's got, or is it kind of under the table?
He's a privacy consultant, as he says, and he says he does not do anything illegal. He really helps people set themselves up as kind of virtual entities. So rather than doing something like, say, offshore banking, you know, which is kind of like in a gray area legally, he will help people set up anonymous LLCs where they can kind of funnel all their money anonymously. So it's really about just kind of shrinking and minimizing as much as possible any kind of mark you have in the world. So it's really more about like privacy than assuming new identities, for example.
Now, the believers that you've called, those who believe, for example, that Michael Jackson faked his death, why do they really think that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, I mean, when I got to know some of the believers, I mainly profile a woman named Pearl Jr., who's a very ardent believer, and she has some great stuff online if your listeners are interested in learning more. She has a YouTube channel that's great. So I really spent a lot of time getting to know her specifically. And I mean, as far as I can tell, you know, she really believes it, and she's dedicated, you know, a great deal of her life into, you know, cobbling together this vast array, this kind of mosaic of facts and evidence and discrepancies. And, but, you know, it all comes down to, you wouldn't do that if you were just kind of a casual Michael Jackson fan. And I write this in the book. I say, you know, if you think you're a Michael Jackson fan, then you've never met a Michael Jackson fan. It's this whole kind of like inner circle of people who just love, love, love Michael. And they're really amazing and kind and very generous to me in explaining their worldview. You know, I do think it's genuine. I don't think that it's for, you know, any kind of like manipulation. A lot of people disagree with that. A lot of other Michael Jackson fans say that what they're doing is cruel and, you know, it's kind of making a mockery of his death and it's mean to his family. But, you know, as far as I can tell, they really believe it. And they even hope that he's coming back any day now.
Amazing story. By the way, you grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts. My mother grew up in Fitchburg, Massachusetts.
Okay, 508 represent.
Not too far. And then I had my cousins were in Leominster, so they were all close to where you were.
Path. Very nice.
And you know how I know this, then, that I'm telling you the truth, because most people would have said, oh, you grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Worcester, oh, the worst. Or Worcester, yeah. You know.
Pretty area out there, Elizabeth. Pretty area indeed.
It has those charms.
So the book, where do you get it? If people want to buy it, Plain Dead.
You can get it at your local bookseller. You can get it from Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold.
What's the big message you want people to take away after they read the book?
So what I really learned in all my research and through speaking with people who had staked their deaths themselves and people who investigate these kinds of crimes, I think that what I learned is that we all have this fantasy that if we were to fake our deaths and say, you know, live the palm tree lifestyle in Belize or just some beautiful country we've always wanted to live, that we would somehow be different in our second lives, that we would be this superior version of ourselves and that we could leave all our troubles and foibles and neuroses behind. But the fact is, we really are who we are. Like, we are fundamentally imprinted to, you know, with our habits and behaviors and likes and dislikes. And really leaving yourself is fundamentally impossible. You can kind of make little changes here and there. But I think what a lot of the people I spoke with who take their deaths found is that, you know, they still were who they were. And they wanted to maintain those connections to loved ones in their past lives. So I guess what I learned is that, you know, making this life the best you can is really kind of probably a better choice.
That's the way to go for it. Elizabeth, we're going to come back and take phone calls. And maybe, just maybe, some people will call about wanting to fake their own death, or maybe they have.